Hello, welcome back to the PowerShell 10th anniversary celebration event. It's good to have you with us. We've had a jam-packed session so far. Hopefully you've kept with us all the way. Great previous session on some of the open source enhancements we've made, some good demo there as well. Minimal slides, great demo, what everyone likes to see. If you missed any of it, it'll be available on demand in the next day or so. So you'll be able to check it out on channel9.msdn.com. You can keep in touch with myself, Matt, and Keith on Twitter. We're monitoring the hashtag PowerShell 10 year. And also, you can get in touch via questions on channel9.msdn.com. You'll see us on the homepage. So if you've got a question about PowerShell, easy or difficult, we'll try our best to answer them. And we've got a few minutes now, Keith, to answer a couple of questions before the next session where we're going to hear from some of the people who've been involved in PowerShell for a long, long time. So first question, will PowerShell PS6.0 give us the ability to compile PS classes to .NET assemblies and have native images assemblies as well?
That's something that the team is looking into. It's not something that we've committed to at this point in time.
Right.
Yeah.
Good answer. Excellent. Right. So next question. What do I need to do to get some PowerShell stickers?
So actually, the first and best way to do it is to participate in our code golf contest, which is underway, because we will be sending a couple of PowerShell stickers along to the winners as well as our prize.
Yeah.
But if you are really desperate for a sticker, you can email me, keithb@microsoft.com, but I'll obviously need your address. And so that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, or you can send us a postcard as well.
Send us a postcard.
To Keith Bankston at Microsoft, and then 1 Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington, 98052, USA. That's the correct address, isn't it? If it doesn't get
perfect.
Here, then email probably a bit quicker. Which site should we use? PowerShell Gallery, GitHub, CodePlex, and when should we use them, from Alan?
That's a really good question. So our focus is certainly going to be on the following things. PowerShell Gallery is where we want people to publish stable code that they have that's available for sharing. So when you've been working on something and you've reached the point where you know that this is something the other members of the community are going to be interested in, then that's when you publish it to PowerShellGallery.com. Where should you work it up? Well, that's entirely up to your own preferences. We like GitHub. It works very well for us, and that's in fact where you should start with your development generally. Work through all of the issues there, get it to the point where you can start sharing it with your friends, and have that open conversation. Take the issues, let other people help you get it to the point where it's stable, and then of course run it out to PowerShell Gallery. There's nothing wrong with any of the other solutions. There's a lot of them available. At that point, it's personal preference.
Okay, so a slightly different direction now. Is the default output of format-custom based on a variation of JSON?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer.
I'm
going to have to ask Bruce.
Right, we'll stick with it. We'll leave that question on and see if we can get back to you throughout the day. But Mike M., you're winning the hardest question award so far because you've stumped Keith there. So another good community, somebody rather than a question, a comment from Josh Duffney is... another great community on Spiceworks. So community.spiceworks.com/programming/PowerShell. So that's more of a statement, yeah, no question there. But yeah, definitely
good.
Worth checking out as well. Final one before we go to the next session. Will bots, in your mind, and command line replace the GUI? Which is a big admin, you know, a lot of admins still use the GUI out there, so.
In fact, it really is a huge point of conversation that we've been having inside Windows for a long time. And if you look at the direction of Windows Server and you look at Nano Server, for example, what we're hearing is that having the GUI by default installed on Windows Server does a number of things and means that people end up with elements on the server that are not really there for the primary workload.
Yeah.
So the GUI elements are being pulled off of the server more and more. And if you look at how the things get done, the recently released server management tools is an online service that we've rolled out.
Runs in Azure, yeah.
Yep. It's a great tool. And what does it do? It provides a GUI that's web-based, but it's not hosted on the server itself.
Right.
What runs on the server? PowerShell.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, if you are working on these high-performant servers that you were delivering more and more. Very little GUI, if any, involved, unless you, of course, consider PowerShell a GUI. And then instead, what you're seeing is that the GUI is pulled off of the box and delivered independently.
So some of the demos that were early in the day from Richard, I think it was, he was doing a lot of remote control, remote access, showing you how you circumvent the firewall or use commands that don't necessarily worry about the firewall. So there's, in a remote world, with a headless server like Nano Server, those can be very, very valuable.
Indeed.
Cool. Well, I think that's all right for questions for now. We'll come back to Mike Ems on the JSON question a bit later on. So that's stumped Keith for now, but I'm sure we'll find the answer. So what have we got next on the agenda? What's coming up?
What we have next is, as it turns out, there's a number of the team members who have been around for 10 years. And we got several of them together, put them in a room, and recorded what happened. And they're going to start by showing you what it meant to try to use the first incarnation of PowerShell, Monad, and then go on to talk about some of the cultural and development changes that have happened over the course of the last 10 years. It's actually a lot of fun. I hope that you guys enjoy it, and here's the video for you.
Hi, I'm Krishna Vutkuri.
Hey, I'm Nana Lakshmanan.
Jason Shirk.
Dan Travison.
I'm Jim Truer.
Bruce Payet.
Hemant Maurer.
Lee Holmes.
Norberto Arrieta.
Dan Harmon.
So we are here with a group of people who have been working on PowerShell for I don't know how long. So we'll go and hear from them interesting and enlightening story. And before we start, we'll look at how Jeffrey used to look 10 years ago. Now you have seen how Jeffrey used to look 10 years ago. The next thing is how PowerShell used to look 10 years ago. And Lee, can you show us that?
Absolutely. So let's talk about an interesting new command shell that we've been working on. So you see here, it looks like a regular command shell that you might be used to. You've got commands. We call them commandlets. Here's an example of running a command to get the list of processes. Now, get process isn't the only one we have. Let's take a look at the other commands that our new Monad shell has. What you do notice here is that the commands are in a verb noun syntax, very useful. There's a slash in between them so that you can tell the difference here. So the different commands that are available clearly have a lot of commands. Now in terms of, let's talk about one of the things that Monad offers, which is pipelining. So I can now run get command, pipe this into the count text commandlet, a very useful commandlet to talk about the number of, to measure the lines of text in an output. So you see, Monad has 70 commands. It is absolutely going to be a game changer. Now, in addition to commands, you expect that commands work well in a shell, but Monad has built-in scripting, which is one of the fundamental changes that makes the difference between administrative in a shell and administrative scripting so useful. So let's talk a little example here. We've got a string. That makes sense. You can also do things like, in the command line, add two numbers. But the scripting language is so powerful, I can even do things like add two strings. It gives you the kind of output that you would expect. Now, one of the things you also have with commandlets is the ability to write things directly to the screen if you want. So you can run the echo console commandlet. You see now we're outputting stuff directly to the screen. All right, now let's talk about, you know, the provider infrastructure in Monad. It's very exciting. You can take a look at the different files on your system. So let's use the get location commandlet to show the different files in the current location. Got last, right, time, length, name. Now the interesting thing is that these are actually .NET objects coming out of these commands. So I can do things like, start to do things like filtering. So I can do get location star.exe. Now, I talked about .NET objects. One of the things that makes this really interesting is I can use the PowerShell, I can use the Monad pipeline to start looking at specific properties. So I can use the pick object commandlet. And now these are just the names of the things that have come across.
So Lee, can you format in table format or list format with Monad?
Yes, absolutely. So the get command Commandlet does let you take a look at the different commands that are useful for formatting, including some of their parameters. Now, one of the things here is you might notice that it's been kind of painful to do all this typing of commandlet names. We also offer aliasing. So what you can do is set slash alias. And I'm going to say dir. You know, we're used to dir in some other shells, so we're going to do that as an alias for the get location. And now, with the magic of monad aliases, I can just do dir, and again get the same output that I used to from regular PowerShell monad commandlet. Okay, so we got there a bunch of great shell management stuff. Now let's take a look at some more of the scripting language. So I can create variables. Now one of the interesting built-in syntaxes here is the for each keyword. So now I can do things like for each item, and then I say what I'm going to iterate over. So what I did here is I created a list of items, used the for each keyword to iterate over those items, and list each one. So this is a great way in Monad to start doing bulk management operations. I can also do things like get env. I talked about the Monad's provider framework. I can take a look at the different environment variables in the system. Very, very useful. Now, one of the things that you might want to do sometimes is, in Monad, deal with the scripting language and also external commands. So I can do things like this. I can just store the result of a command into a variable and start taking action against that.
Thank you, Lee. It was great to see Monad in action. And people who are trying, who are going to try Monad, I'll tell them, remind them they should definitely read the release notes. And one thing that caught my attention was the highlighted one. If you use set content and if it fails, it will erase the content of the file that is already there. Or if you are still used to get children, don't use it anymore. It has been renamed to get child item. So those are a couple of things to keep in mind when you start playing with Monad. So let me ask a question to two of the founding people who did the language. So can you guys talk about all the challenges you face with designing a language for Monad and all those fun backtick and slashes that Lee just showed you? So let's talk to Jim and Bruce, who were one of the initial people to implement the language. So can you talk about the challenges and the fun stuff you had to work with to come up with the language, especially the syntax that Lee showed about Monad?
Sure. One of the obvious changes that we made, I thought actually we'd made it earlier than that, was to use a dash between the noun and the verb, because the slash looked too much like a file system thing. It was very confusing.
Yeah, the thing that we wanted to avoid was people thinking about files and files systems and executables and those sorts of things. We wanted to make sure that people understood that these things were all built in. And if you make it look like a file, people think it's a file. And in fact, it was a file for a very short period of time. And so were the parameters, were also slashes. So a command line would look like a lot of slashes. And it was simply not very attractive, and it was kind of confusing at best.
Yes, once you start actually dealing with files, when you have your options with slashes and your files with slashes, then everything becomes a whole pile of slashes. It's very confusing. Some of the other interesting things that Lee showed that doesn't look like it's a huge difference, but the ability to do numeric expressions just from the command line. That actually was a big change to the design of a shell, any shell. Normally a shell takes a command and writes to output. Monad is different, PowerShell is different, because we actually evaluate expressions right in the command line. And that introduced all sorts of interesting side effects, like the plus plus operator had to be treated specially, since everything that produced a result got emitted to the command line. If you're doing plus plus dollar x, you don't want that spurious value being emitted to the pipeline. So we needed a way of treating those things as what we ended up calling voidable statements. So just a ton of little things like that, where you have this sort of hybrid between a real programming language and a shell language, made things challenging to design.
Yeah, it's really true. If you take the single assumption that you want to be able to have a shell do more than just execute a command, the ripple effect and the decisions you have to make are pretty substantial. There's a whole bunch of them, even in our if statements, and in a whole lot of places where that one little statement that says, no, 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 we want to make the command line be a statement evaluation, then you have a lot of trickle-down changes that you have to make. I think it worked very well. I'm pretty happy with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I swear, I remember the first 2 years when we were working on this. I was reasonably convinced that we would have a decent programming language, but I was really terrified that we would have a terrible shell. Because shell design, the patterns that have been established are very well established. The Unix shells are incredibly successful, they're incredibly good shells, and they have a specific pattern that they use that we were violating. We were taking a different approach to producing a shell, and I was really nervous that the end result wouldn't be usable as a shell. It wasn't until one day I was actually able to spend the entire day in PowerShell doing all my work, compiling all my programs and so on, I went, wow, this is actually a shell. I can live with this.
Fortunately, I had, coming into the project, is I had 15 years of Unix shell use background, so I was kind of the sounding board at one point to say, no, 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 this needs to be this way, because anybody trying to use it interactively is going to say, what?
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense. So the partnership that we had was really about
staying sane,
satisfying the tension between making a fantastic programming language and a great experience from an interactive perspective. It was super important for me to be sure that people would use this shell from an interactive perspective as well, because I really thought that was one of the things that was missing from Windows.
Right, it was the user interactive experience.
Everyone was relegated to command.exe, which was not really a very useful way of doing what we wanted to do. So it was always high on my list to be sure that we were a really, really solid interactive experience.
And then having the sounding board, having somebody do a sanity check on crazy ideas that I might come up with, was super, super useful. Jim was instrumental in making sure that it was a good shell, which is really what our goal was, that it be a really good shell. Oh, speaking of our development process and so forth, and writing code, we have one teeny tiny little friend that we'd like to introduce. So people are familiar with continuous integration these days, where you just submit your changes and they go into the continuous integration build. Well, this was our continuous integration system. We, at one point, there were so many changes being made over all of the code that, and it took so long to run the test suites to verify your changes, that we ended up using the Hula Monkey, a physical object. And the only person who got to check in was the person who had the Hula Monkey in their office. So this was our check-in token. We've come a long way since then. We have a much better CI system now.
Narve, though, you have an interesting history with PowerShell. You joined the PowerShell team around PowerShell version 2.
Version 2, yes.
And then you left and made a mistake. And you fixed it by coming back. And then you came back. Tell us what brings you back to PowerShell.
Well, first I took a break from PowerShell. I had been in version 2, version 3, and version 3 I was working in PowerShell Web Access, got interested in web development, so took a break and went to Bing, Big Maps. And then I started missing my team. The PowerShell team is great in that it's a very tight team, very focused, with a lot of, with great customer interaction. And I was missing that part. So that was, when I heard that, there was an opportunity to come back to the team. I jumped into it. Now I'm working in DSC, in server configuration, and being happy to, be very happy to be back.
So I got involved with Monad in the earlier days when Jeffrey was dropping builds every hour or two. I was a developer on the MMC team, and I was approached to see what it would take to integrate Monad into MMC. It was actually quite fun if I didn't mind taking a build every few minutes. A lot of discussions about how can I generate a script from these actions that we just performed. A lot of discussions, well, I need multiple threads. Well, you can't have them right now. and also went down a path of trying to prototype a very early version of what you see in the ISC right now. Very primitive, but it was a blast. That's a primary. I went off to the test board after that, and we took PowerShell with us, or in the case of Monad. We use it heavily in test. And now I'm back in software engineering again, and I'm using it even more.
Okay. Next to you, Nana.
Yeah, I'm not going to pronounce your full name. It's going to take ages. So
tell me, you have been working on PowerShell for over 10 years. So what keeps you? Typically in Microsoft, people work on a product for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, but 10 years is too long.
Yeah, so PowerShell, if you look at the journey, the 1.0 is all about putting a shell on the system because, you know, command.exe and bash files weren't cutting it. But then when we went on into version 2, it was all about the universal code execution model where you can run your same code on your console, on a script, in the background, on a remote machine, you know, in multiple forms. And then version 3, we were doing like a lot of, okay, how do you really scale up? You know, a lot of performance work was happening in PowerShell. Version 4, if you look at it, it's the start doing the groundwork for things in cloud. You know, how do you make PowerShell work on CoCLR? You know, how do we get desired state configuration, configuration as code, etc. And in 5.0, it's been like, you know, go full blown into everything that's needed for the cloud. And all along, you know, in making Windows Server to what it is, PowerShell played a great part. And I was like, you know, happy to be working in this different thing is because the opportunities kept growing. And most importantly, you can find some of the smartest people on the planet in this room, right? And the opportunity to work with all of you guys and Jeffrey and others has been like tremendous. So that's something that, you know, always kept me motivated. And as Norbert already pointed out, the interaction with the customers, the opportunity to go talk with them, you know, directly through the community, through conferences, that was also one of the motivating factors for me to stick around. And I'm still here doing the same state configuration after 10 years.
So Jason, as I understand, you were working on C++ stuff before joining PowerShell team. So what brings you to PowerShell?
Yeah, so I was working on C++ for like 10 years. And PowerShell 1.0 had just come out, and I was doing some prototype work for C++. I prototyped it in PowerShell. And that was just really amazing to me that I like ended up rewriting that code in C++, but it was just a really interesting language to prototype something. I kind of was looking for PowerShell in 1994. I remember that far back. I inherited a test framework and had to make it cross-platform, and end up using Perl. But at the time, I didn't know I was looking for PowerShell because it didn't exist. But when PowerShell came along, I realized, I kind of connected the dots and said, you know, I was looking for that tool that far back. When the job opening came up, and I was kind of, I'd already been using PowerShell for a little while, I knew I wanted to work on it and make it better.
So let me just add more to it. So. You liked working on PowerShell, still you decided to move on and do Xbox stuff. And then you came back again. So tell us the story behind that.
Yeah, well, so I worked on Xbox One for about a year before it came out. And it was just, you know, an exciting project that I couldn't really pass up, working on backwards compatibility. And that project got moved around a little bit and put on hold for a little while. And so after about a year on Xbox One, I decided, and I heard that there was some discussions about making PowerShell open source. And that was really exciting to me because that was something I wanted to see happen. So I came back to work on open source.
Jim, you are holding onto a shirt, a t-shirt. Can you tell what it is and what are those red color pictures on it?
So this, we were doing a show, I think a trade show, and we wanted to give people things, so we, at the time I was a program manager, so I was kind of in charge of creating all the things to give away, and one of the things we wound up doing was a little flashlight that said Monad on it, and then we also created this shirt. And when you create a shirt like this, you need some sort of graphical image, otherwise it's really boring. So I did a bunch of research and found this little molecule. It's called cubane, and cubane is a hydrocarbon. It's a synthetic hydrocarbon that's created out of essentially carbon and hydrogen, that's it. But it's made in the shape of a cube, and it has little hydrogen atoms on each one of the corners. And they're used to connect anything to anything. So when I thought about Monad and how Monad was connecting everything to everything, I thought cubane was a great model for that because it allows you to connect pretty much any chemical you want to connect to. As it turns out, it's also used in explosives. It is one of the most powerful explosives that you can actually get your hands on, because it's such a compact and interesting molecule. It's completely stable at room temperature as well, so it really worked for me. It was a lot about what Monad was all about: connect everything to everything, lots and lots of power. So I really liked it. We got a better image in the end, but for a while, this was the image.
So, next up is Dan Harmon. Dan, you joined PowerShell from Server Manager.
Yeah.
Tell us about your initial experience with PowerShell and the features you worked on.
Yeah, so I was working on Server Manager at the time. I was part of the same organization. But I had known about PowerShell for a long time and was very excited to get the opportunity to move over and start working on it during V2. And when I started working on PowerShell, there was a feature from V1 that was called snap-ins. and I got to learn about that, and there were a lot of challenges with snap-ins. It was pretty tough to write one. You had to write a lot of code. You had to, you could only use C#. You had to compile it and then get it installed. You had to put things in the registry, and then the commandlets that got exposed through snap-ins were all in the global scope. And so I got to work on a new feature in V2 called modules, which was a lot of fun. And as the scope of modules grew, it got where we were covering a lot of different scenarios. And we had to think a lot about some of the challenges around designing modules. And I printed off a couple of old documents that I wanted to share with Bruce. I don't know if you remember.
I was thinking, I wonder if he still has those documents on.
Yeah. So those are we'll share these.
Quite terrifying.
But these were some of the thinking we did around
a lot of scenarios.
Yes, around name resolution and scoping, and we just had a lot of things that we had to think about in order to get the design for modules right.
More and more things.
Yes, yes, and a lot of it. Some of the things when we added like nested modules and module manifests, some of those things came in pretty late in the cycle during V2 and.
Yeah, you can find Bruce working late in the night if you walk into office for whatever reason.
Yeah. Pulling his hair out.
Yes.
I believe modules.
Yeah, but a lot of great memories too, working on that and seeing that evolve over the years has been a real fun thing.
Thanks, Dan. So most of us have been talking very serious about, and you might get a perception the team is very serious, does always heads down, but that's not the case. You have seen glimpses with Hula Monkey. Now we'll talk to Krishna. So Krishna has been with PowerShell over 10 years as well. So Krishna, tell us something interesting that happened to you while you were on vacation.
I was the person who created the initial update.exe package for PowerShell. So as part of shipping in Windows. You know, as it turns out, shipping in Windows, you are not allowed to use existing technologies like MSIs, EXEs. You have to use a specific technology called update. So I was working on this update technology, created all the packages. We were supposed to release in November, so I said, I've done everything. And I took a break. I went to Las Vegas, playing in casinos, I guess. And then one evening, I get a call from my manager. Hey, Krishna, I need your password. I said, why? So he wanted my password because there was a build break in the night. And then getting these enlistments, Windows enlistments, it takes a lot of time. Like, it takes 3 hours or something like that. So to make things faster, he wants to reuse my enlistment. So I gave my corporate password to my manager over the phone in Las Vegas.
And your manager is still around and you are still around.
I'm still around.
Yeah, everything turned out fine.
But now that it's on film.
Okay, we'll have a question for Hemant. We'll leave him out.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us, Dr. Hemant, what brought you into the Monad team?
Okay, good question, Anna. So I was finishing off my PhD and I wanted to not code anymore. So for summer internship, I said, oh, where can I go where I don't have to code and it's still interesting. So I interviewed with Microsoft on campus and they said, oh, we want to fly you over to Seattle. And I said, fun, I'm a Linux guy, I'll go there, have party because nobody will hire a Linux guy at Microsoft. And by mistake, it ended up that I had an interview loop with Monad team. Jim was one of the interviewers, and then another one was Steve Fowler, and they asked question, I think I did pretty decent, and they gave me two options. There's this UI called MMC, and there's this command line. And I had no choice but to pick Monad. So that's how I joined the PowerShell team or Monad team during my internship, and then I came back full time. I thought I knew everything about Monad when I finished my internship, but it turned out it was just execution policy. There was a lot more of a world around.
And you have been coding in PowerShell ever since.
Yes, I'm trying my best. So since we are talking about fun stuff, we have a couple of pictures of team doing fun. Here is a decoration we did outside our dev manager's office when he got married and he was coming back from vacation. And you can see there are balloons filled inside his office. We somehow managed to pack it up. And here he's coming back. He sees a greeting in his native language. And he's dreading what is inside. Because he knows the team is up to something. And as soon as he opens the door, he realizes there are balloons. And he could still fit in. They did spill out in the hallway. And somebody even offered a pin to pop those balloons. And he refused. Because he wanted to embrace all the love and affection he was giving to him. And he ended up sitting in that office for about 2 days with balloons around. And here is the hallway picture when balloons started spilling out. And you can see Dan and Jason. And this was the last few clips where he decides to sit down, put his laptop or desktop and work there. And
thanks to Jason for lending his cycle pump motorized one so he could fill in all these balloons.
Oh, and I think he used the pump to pop them, like taped the pin onto the balloons, he could just start whacking them.
So we started kind of a tradition of using PowerShell scripts to do announcements or tell more details about what's happening in people's life. I don't have all the scripts. I know Krishna and Dan has written something similar. This is me sending a mail announcing the arrival of my daughter in PowerShell, and that time I was working on workflows, so I had to write a workflow, and I'm not sure if the syntax is still correct, but this is pretty old.
How many times did you run this workflow?
That was the second time and only time.
So just to add to this, I still have a working script that I used to download 13,000 names, Hindu names for my daughter. I didn't end up choosing the final name, but I have a PowerShell script through which I consolidated 13,000 names.
Hello, welcome back to the PowerShell 10th anniversary celebration event. It's good to have you with us. Matt and Keith still here. Hopefully you've been enjoying all the sessions so far. We've had a selection of different pieces of content, all of which will be available on channel9.msdn.com for your viewing pleasure at a later time. So, without further ado, we're going to go pretty much straight to our next session. We've got one commercial, is that right?
Got one commercial, and then we'll come back and we'll understand a little bit more about what it takes to manage the PowerShell GitHub repository.
Cool. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Manikyam Bhavanla. I'm a senior software engineer on PowerShell team. Basically, I started using PowerShell in 2010. The first time I used PowerShell for automating WSS scenarios in 2011. And so basically, in PowerShell, I have added a couple of good features like PowerShell Get and also majorly I worked on PowerShell Gallery, and I like the PowerShell Get module as it impacts entire PowerShell community, and I like being part of PowerShell community team. I like working with the PowerShell community.
Welcome back, folks, to the PowerShell 10th anniversary celebration, and we really want to thank you for joining us. The next session that we've set up are a couple of the people that I work with all day, or actually frequently, and Joey Aiello is one of my fellow program managers in the PowerShell team. Jason Shirk is a principal software engineer also in the PowerShell team. What they're really going to talk about is what it takes to manage a GitHub repo, or specifically the PowerShell GitHub repo where we have open sourced PowerShell these days. So Jason, Joey.
Hi guys, how you doing? I'm Joey.
And I'm Jason.
And we're going to be talking to you today about the PowerShell committee and repository maintainers, who we are, what it is that we do, and what it's like to be managing this PowerShell repository day in, day out. So I think Jason's going to take it away.
All right. So we're going to talk about a couple different things. We're going to talk about maintainers, and we're going to talk about the committee. So first thing off, we start off in the PowerShell repo, and I'm going to go to the docs directory, and we're going to go into the governance
community
yeah. folder.
So this is, again, github.com/PowerShell/PowerShell, where many of you know we've open sourced all of PowerShell. We're building PowerShell now for Windows, Mac, and Linux, and this is where all of our day in, day out development's going on. So.
Yeah, so this governance document describes a bit of what we're talking about here. So the PowerShell committee, first thing up here. So we'll just go down here, take a look at the committee. So the committee has, right now, 5 members. Bruce Payette, me, Steve Lee, Hemant, and Joey, standing right here. And you can see that we talk about things like PowerShell RFCs. So the committee is talking about more high-level design sorts of issues, where the maintainers are worried more about the code.
Yeah, so we're essentially responsible for determining, you know, whether something's a breaking change or not, whether we're going to accept that breaking change. You know, when someone comes along with a new feature proposal, whether it's internal to Microsoft or it's one of you submitting one of these review for comment documents that we'll go over a bit later, we're the ones responsible for voting on that thing, deciding essentially whether or not we're going to take it into PowerShell. So
exactly. Yeah, so breaking changes are really, really important for us to talk about, but also it's just like high-level design sorts of issues. Like, do we want to add this commandlet? Do we want to take something as a new module? Is it something that, you know, really belongs in the core of PowerShell, or does it kind of, you know, go outside of like something that you would just add on to PowerShell?
Right. For instance, just last week we were talking about an RFC for globbing, you know, yep. how we're going to handle wildcards in a cross-platform way between Windows and Linux. And so there's a, you know, multitude of design challenges that come along with that. And so we're the, you know, governing body is responsible for making those sorts of tough design calls.
Yes. Yep. So should we jump over to the RFC repo?
Yeah. So let's give you guys an idea of what those look like. And again, all of you, you know, all of these review for comment documents, they're very specifically called a review for comment doc, so that you are able to review it and comment on it, right? The idea here is we're getting your feedback in real time on these designs and taking all of that into account as we make our decisions. So definitely come by and check out this repository after our talk to see what it is that we're discussing day in, day out.
Yeah, so we have a different repo than where the code, all the documents are in a separate repo. And we have just pick, you know, one that was written quite a while ago. Generalized splatting, so motivation, a spec, you know, some examples, some alternates, whatever. So the committee will go ahead and review this before accepting it. And we also have people will comment on them. So you can go to the issues and, you know, just pick out this one, and you'll see a whole bunch of people have commented on this, and the committee will go ahead and review the comments, take that into consideration, maybe ask the author of the RFC to make some changes to the RFC, or we'll just, you know, reject it if it's not appropriate, or we'll accept it.
And as Jason alluded to, you know, these are RFCs that are written both by members of the PowerShell team and also members of the community. So we've gotten a few now that are, you know, some of you folks who have said, you know, it'd be lovely to have this feature in PowerShell. Here's what I think a good design might look like. And then, you know, if we decide that it's important enough, we could potentially implement that design after we've accepted that RFC. Or it could be one of you that actually decides to take that accepted RFC and go implement the code to make it happen. So,
yeah, one of the questions we've had asked a lot is, you know, I want to see a change in PowerShell. So, like, if I write an RFC, does that mean I have to implement the feature? And the answer is no, absolutely not. I mean, we really want to get people contributing to the design of PowerShell, but we don't expect everybody to be able to implement all of their ideas. So, PowerShell team can take a great idea that's been refined by the community and go ahead and implement it if that's what it, or it could be maybe, somebody in the community implements the idea, but it's not the person who wrote the RFC. So the RFC process is really just about kind of getting to a good design that we're happy with.
Yeah, so yeah, you don't have to have the technical development skills to contribute to the design of PowerShell today, and so definitely come check out the RFC process and talk to us. And just to give you a frame of reference, we meet roughly once a week and talk internally. We're starting to get a little bit better, I think, about making our discussions a public record. If you go to many of the issues that we discuss, some of which are tagged, review committee on the PowerShell repository, we're doing a better job of posting back to those.
Yep.
But we have been asked, hey, can you open up your meetings? Maybe you can, publish all up meeting notes every time you guys meet. And those are two things that we're definitely looking into doing. We'd like to have a more public and engaged presence from the community. So, definitely let us know. And hopefully, we've got the Twitter feed coming in here. If you guys have any other questions about how it is that we run the committee, definitely, reach out to us now. So going back, I think we want to check out the PowerShell repository again. So we've also got this concept of a repository maintainer, and I think we can link. We just click that guy.
And repository maintainer. So
we can even go to here.
Ah, there we go. So maintainers are responsible for the code, right now we have 6 maintainers. So for any code change to go into PowerShell, one of these 6 people has to merge it into master. Nobody else is allowed to merge into master. So one of these 6 people is responsible for the final acceptance of some code.
And for those of you that aren't Git experts, master is essentially the branch of our code that represents the current state of PowerShell. So it's the golden.
It's what we release. Anything that's not in master is not going out in a release. It's pretty much that simple. Once it goes into master, it will, right now we're releasing roughly twice a month. So when it's in master, we'll have a release out within, a couple weeks.
So does that mean that these 6 people are doing all the code reviews for everything coming into PowerShell?
No, that'd be crazy if, we had to review everything. We do, sometimes look at things, everything in detail, but oftentimes we'll pass on the responsibilities of reviewing something to somebody who's an expert in that area.
But you are making sure that they do that review before you merge. And,
exactly.
And
so
that, tests are getting written for things, and we're not releasing untested code out into the wild or anything.
Yeah,
like that.
So the maintainers are really mostly responsible for making sure all of the things that need to be done are done correctly. Not necessarily that the code is correct for whatever, just to pick an example, none of the committee members are experts in remoting. So, if we want to accept a change related to remoting, I'm going to ask the expert in remoting to do the review. And then after he signs off on it, then, the committee will go through and say, oh, yeah, there aren't any tests or, something like that. And we'll just make sure we, dot the I's and cross the T's, make sure everything's is good.
Awesome. So maybe we can jump in and take a look at what issue triage looks like here. So
yeah, sure.
As we've been talking about, you guys are more than welcome now to essentially hop into our GitHub repository and, post any bugs or feature requests that you might have as GitHub issues. And so, what does it look like? We've been saying it's sort of a day in the life of a committee member or a maintainer, of which Jason is both, of course. So what are we doing when you guys submit this feedback and how are we triaging that and deciding whether to take action on it or not?
Yeah, so, I guess we can, triage something right now. How about that?
Right. Yeah, let's do it. So this got posted just yesterday.
Okay, so this is the most recent issue that has not been triaged. And so the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to go look through here and kind of, decide what kind of issue is this. So we'll want to label the issue, whether it's based on, like, an area. What kind of, is it part of, let's just bring up the labels here. And we have a whole bunch of areas. Is it related to the build, a commandlet, a console? So these areas are pretty broad, and we'll want to assign the areas. And this one looks like maybe engine.
Calls. Yeah, it's something to do. It looks like something to do with module loading here.
So we'll label it engine.
So this is sort of a rough first pass from us, and this is something that members of the committee and the repository maintainers both do, and it's essentially to pare this down so that someone who is an expert with the engine, probably yep. still you, yep. Is going to look at this at a later time and make sure that, basically determine whether or not this is a legitimate bug, whether this is a feature request, and then, whether or not it's egregious enough for us to take action on it immediately, or to throw it into our backlog, which we define as this up for grabs label. We actually yep. just changed this now. If you want to.
Yeah, so we would go through and say, I'm not gonna make a decision on this one just at this moment, but we would go decide, is this a bug? Is this a question? Are they looking for a new feature? And so this is how we're going to kind of like classify it. And so the triage may or may not classify it. It may move on to the area expert on the engine or commandlets to do that classification. If we're going to throw it on the backlog, we're going to go throw the up for grabs label on there.
Which means that essentially anybody out there in the community can implement this thing. We're not looking at doing it right this second. We may choose to do it sometime in the future, but no one from our team is actively working on it, and any of you are free to, to fix those problems.
Yeah, let's go see how many are for.
So we look at the up for grabs label here. We've got
130 open issues up for grabs.
So some of these are very complex. Some of these are really simple, and actually are a great segue for you to learn. How to do some C# development if you're maybe not an expert. I know I'm actually now going through many of these to hone my coding skills a little bit as a PM, get a little more technical.
This wouldn't be a good one for you.
Yeah?
I think this would be pretty easy. Yeah.
This is probably a one-line change somewhere.
It's not too many lines of code, but it's a pretty simple change. This is an example of something where, it's a great idea, I think. This one's going to need some resource changes because localized error messages. But it's kind of a good sort of example of just kind of getting started in PowerShell to be able to add some value. And then after we add these attributes, we'd have to go through our existing code base and start using it. Just adding this would be actually a pretty simple thing that I think somebody might.
I dove right in here to the body here, but yeah. So basically, you're looking at adding an attribute so that a parameter. Basically ensure the parameter is either positive or non-negative.
Yep.
And
then get a good error message is the point of adding this one.
Yeah. So that's
whereas right now it's going to tell you the error the number is not in the range of 1 and max int, which nobody they're going to look at that like what? What in the world's that about? Like isn't that like every integer? Well, except for the negative ones.
Yeah, so look, this is a great way to cut your teeth on writing C# code. We won't bite your heads off, if your code isn't perfect right from the get-go. I promise, Jason's a really nice guy, and he'll give you some tips on improving your code potentially, maybe how to write some tests for it to make sure that your code isn't going to break or regress going forward.
Yeah, no, we really want to encourage people to contribute, and so I have a very high standard, and I'm going to provide feedback where feedback's important. We want to keep the quality of the product high, but I also want to help people, right? I want to help them contribute to us. So I want to help anybody who wants to contribute give us the sort of quality that we're expecting, and try to do that in the nicest possible way.
Awesome. So what happens? So I've written some code on my local machine.
Yep.
I've written some tests. I think it works for the most part. What do I do now?
Well, it's time to go create a pull request. So I'm going to go over to my fork, and so I've already created some pull requests, but I've got some branches here. I'm going to go create a branch in my own fork.
And for those of you that don't know, a pull request is essentially a request for the official project to take in the changes that you've made in your personal fork. And Jason's showing his personal fork here and how he requests that those changes be accepted.
Exactly. So I went over, just before we started this talk, I created this pull request to fix some tests that were failing in our CI system, our continuous integration. system, and for our, well, not in our CI, they were failing in our nightly runs. We don't run all of our tests in CI because that's actually kind of slow. We have some tests that take longer. We accepted a PR that broke some of our nightly tests, and so I went ahead and fixed that right before this talk. And I created a pull request. So go over to the pull request, and you can see the changes. So as the maintainer, I could go ahead and just, you know, am I on the pull?
I think you could view it right here.
Oh, yeah, here we go. There.
Just missed it.
So I go over to the pull request here, and we see some things that you don't normally see about Sergey closing and reopening it. Sometimes we have to do that to, if our CI system is, if we have something that caused failures in our CI, the easiest way to rerun everything is like you close the issue and reopen,
re-trigger that automatic check.
So the, one of the first things as a maintainer that I'm going to do is I'm going to go look here and see all checks have passed. If I don't see that, I'm probably not going to look at anything. I'm going to assume that there is something wrong with your changes and that you're going to fix them. Now, I may go in and actually, you know, show all checks. I may go look in the details here and look at the failure and say, you know what, this really is you, or maybe it's something on our side. I may do that much just to figure out what's going on with the failure. And if it's your problem, I might say, you know what, your changes did cause a regression and cause one of our tests to fail, or maybe it's one of your new tests that you've written and it's failing maybe on Linux instead of Windows, so maybe you only tested on Windows. And I'll say, you know, we won't review the change until you fix the tests and get everything to pass. So then once everything is passing, I'm going to go ahead and take a look at the changes. And so in this case, I'm going to go review these changes, and you know they're pretty straightforward. I'm going to go, you know, start review changes. I'm going to go put in my comments, and since these are my own changes, I'm not going to provide any feedback on my own changes because they're perfect. Let me tell you.
But at this point, you may also bring someone in if this was a really large change set, mm-hmm. and maybe you weren't familiar, you know, with this area of the code. You might at mention someone here and bring them in and say, hey. Until Jim Truer reviews these changes, I'm going to wait to merge them.
Yep. So the maintainers will go through and typically assign something. So we'll look over here on the
it's assigned column right here.
The assigned column here, and we see, you know, some of them are assigned, and that person is the maintainer responsible for merging it into master and driving it to you know, get other people to do the review or whatever, and sometimes a non-maintainer will be assigned, and then they're the ones that are assigned to review it. And once they've signed off on it, then we'll go ahead and maintainer will merge it. So for example, this one here, Francisco is the one assigned, so we can see that he's reviewing the changes, and he asked, you know, for more tests to be added and, you know, do some formatting changes and whatever. But anyway, so we're waiting for Francisco to sign off on this particular one before we merge it.
And I'd like to point out one thing. If you guys notice, there's this label we use here as well, review needed or review waiting on author. And this is actually what we use to essentially say, hey, for review needed, someone from our side really needs to review this thing and give their feedback before any, we're gonna move forward on it. Review waiting on author means we've essentially reached out and said, hey, you know, there's something you guys have to do to, you know, fix your changes, or there's some change that needs to be addressed on your end as the pull request author before we merge this. So for those, we're waiting for an external action before we move forward on it. So yep. If you've got a pull request submitted and it's waiting on author, you know, you should go check out the comments there and see what it is that you need to do.
Oh, there's one other good detail here to bring up, the CLA required, that red
yes,
label.
This one right here.
So if you're an external contributor and you have not signed the contributor license agreement, then we won't actually even look at the changes at all.
In this one, it's really easy. You know, a bot will reply to your pull request and say, hey, you know, I'm your friendly neighborhood CLA bot or something. And you click a link and basically just say, all the code I'm submitting, I own. I'm allowed to give this code to you, and I'm, you know, okay submitting it under the MIT license that we use for PowerShell. So
yeah, we have the CLA requirement for the RFCs as well.
Yes, because you are submitting your designs, you know, to us. So
exactly.
Yep.
So
now I'm looking to the chat here. Do we have any questions about the repository at all? Keith, you see anything?
So at this point, we don't have any questions that have come up
specific to Git, to our GitHub repository. There was one question that kind of came out of left field that I thought I might ask Jason in case he happens to know. Is the default output of format custom based on a variation of JSON?
That's an interesting question. Format custom has been around for as long as PowerShell's been around, you know, V1. So, I mean, it's more than 10 years old, I would guess. And I don't actually know when JSON was really formalized. I don't know. I mean, I think they're kind of, it's kind of a obvious way to represent objects with the nesting and whatnot. So I don't know. I can't say for sure.
I would say you're probably free to submit that question, you know, into the PowerShell repository. We'd probably tag that as an issue question, and you know, if there's, especially if you've got some context around, you know, why it is you're asking that, and you know, if you want something to get changed or enhanced in some way, maybe we, you know, maybe we expose some sort of JSON formatter.
Format-custom-JSON.
Yeah. So that could be an enhancement that we talk about. So that sort of stuff, you know, and it really is it's a wide open field on the repository. You know, we're obviously not giving tech support there. You know, if you've got a script that you're running into problems with and it's likely, you know, your own script that's causing them, well, we're not looking for those sorts of questions. But in general, anything around the design or intent of PowerShell, you know, feel free to submit those questions.
And sometimes it might feel like a tech support sort of thing, but you're just not quite sure. You're like, you know, it could be a bug, or you're not sure if it's you. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, we're totally fine if it turns out it really kind of is tech support, but it was. Sometimes that tells us that there's somewhere that we have to improve too.
Yeah, that there's something that's unclear about PowerShell. That's, you know, if you don't know that something's a bug or not, well, maybe we're, you know, being a little bit opaque somewhere. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, but this really is, I mean, I think the coolest thing about having this open source repository is that this is where you guys live and work.
Indeed.
And you know, this isn't a matter of we need to go check in on something. And actually, yeah, this is, say, day
this
in life.
This is my life. You know, I'm sitting here in notifications. Let's refresh that and see, you know. Now I have a few more things I've got to go look at. And you can see there, I don't
know. Just minutes ago.
Yeah, 2 minutes ago. Back ticks, I don't even know what that's about. I'm going to go take a look at that. But, you know, it's also, I can't, oh, those are docs, so I keep up on that too. We spend a lot of time looking at the notifications, and obviously I can't read every single comment. If I did that, I wouldn't, I mean, I still have to write some code sometime, you know? I mean,
But anyway, you know, yeah, this is where we live and breathe. You know, these are the where we wake up basically and look at these notifications that are coming in from you guys, and you know, basically, yeah, we're having a blast here on GitHub. So I'm really glad you guys could join us today. Again, I'm Joey, program manager for PowerShell.
And I'm Jason Shirk, and software engineer.
And we're gonna throw it back over to Keith and Matt. Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys very much. That's actually very good. And one of the things that people have begun to realize is the direction that we're moving with PowerShell is we're going to do our development in GitHub. So all of the work that you're doing to make sure that the contributions that people are making actually align with the direction and the plans for PowerShell are critically important. So I think we're going to take another short break. This one's not going to be very long. And when we come back, we're going to see one of the more entertaining things that you can do with PowerShell. John Newman is going to talk about how he can use PowerShell to work with his Tesla.
His Tesla, not everybody.
Just his.
Right.
So we'll see you all in a minute.